We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Spiegel and Parkin Show.
The guys went through a lot in Washington. We sat on the tarmac. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and make excuses, but it was a tough couple days to go out to L.A. under those circumstances. I talked about it, I think, in my original comments out there, that I'm looking forward to the day off so the boys could get back here and regroup. It's a challenge. It's a great challenge. And we'll have our fans here tomorrow night. We'll be in our wonderful ballpark and see what happens.
Matt Spiegel, Danny Parkins, middays on The Score.
1 hour until Joe Maddon, who you just heard there, the audio brought to you by TheraWorks Relief. To relieve muscle cramps in your legs and feet, use TheraWorks Relief. This fast-acting foam is clinically proven to relieve leg and foot cramps. Get TheraWorks Relief today at TheraWorksRelief.com. Michael Lombardi in 40 minutes.
Fan responsibility. Cubs need the home crowd, right? You know,
well, they're going to get it.
But sometimes, it's funny, I noted it in game two of the NLDS where the Nationals, you know, who are starting to and now firmly have this reputation as a team that fails in turtles even after they have won a division, won 97, 98 games, and they lose in the first round. After that game one loss, their fans were really loud and really active and really kind of supportive and energetic and stuff like that. And I'm not trying to cheerlead and tell Cub fans to do it, but I wonder if Cub fans feel a responsibility, those who are going to the game, because dudes are down. That team is down. Maddon was down and is under attack and has been chippy. And we'll talk to him in an hour. We'll see how chippy he is. But that they need some good vibes, some good support, don't you think? Some loudness.
Listen, I love that stuff because it's fun and atmosphere, right? It's like I love college crowds because you can feel like, oh, man, people are so invested in it. Playoff crowds sometimes can give you that in the playoffs. I hope that the Cubs give the crowd something to cheer about.
And they definitely will then cheer. Like the explosion and the energy has been incredibly present at Wrigley over the last three years of this run. It's been amazing.
Yeah, but it is normally more reactive than proactive.
Without a doubt.
Like it's
Wrigley does not have the reputation for being one of those kind of places where it's proactive.
Where it's really loud from pitch one. It's like it gets loud when there's two strikes. It gets loud after a home run. It gives the guys the curtain call. It's a loud stadium, but it's loud in celebration. It's not necessarily loud from start to finish. Like when I think of loud start to finish, I think of that Pittsburgh crowd that tried to get in Johnny
Arrieta's
head, and before that, Johnny Cueto's head.
Like, yep.
You know what I mean? Cueto. I think of that Toronto crowd that was like start to finish.
That was insane. That was their first playoff in a while, and that Toronto crowd was volatile from the get-go.
And, I mean, there is something to 8 champagne celebrations since 2015, and it getting to be – it's an expensive ticket. It's getting to be a little old hat. I just saw Teddy Greenstein posted a piece on the Tribune's website. You know, the Cubs have raised the face value for these tickets across the board. You can get into this game for under face value tonight, which is crazy when you think about what the ticket market was for the Cubs last year, running through it a little bit. Now, if it's not as expensive, maybe you get the less, you know, wine and cheese type of crowd and people that are more willing to scream.
Talk about on StubHub or SeatGeek, I should say.
Yeah, just on the secondary market, the tickets are going for a little bit under face value for these games, which is crazy when you consider where they were last year. But also ratings are down a little bit locally and nationally for the Cubs this year compared to last year, 10-15%.
Right.
It's not quite the same.
That's for sure.
And they're not giving you as much to cheer about.
Yeah, but on the front end of that, not quite the same in terms of the excitement. I mean, we've seen that across the board, right? Whether it's the ratings, as you said, or now the ticket prices or whatever. And it's like, and some of the reaction from the people that we've having thrown it out there, even in hour number one, I quit after game one.
Yeah, I don't believe that. The game will come around tonight. It'll be 8 o'clock. First pitch will happen, and you'll be on the edge of your seat in your lucky Cub shirt with an old style in your hand cheering for the team. Like, I don't believe that stuff. I don't believe, like, oh, man, I'm boycotting this team until they fire person X.
No,
like,
no.
The vast majority of that stuff doesn't happen.
I don't believe that, but, like, this – well, how about the reaction that we had, and we've heard this from some others in terms of, like, this was great. It was great. This was my goal. Hey, man, they got back in and they got to the NLCS 3 years in a row. That's amazing. I haven't thought it was the year all year, and I still don't think it's the year.
Yeah,
a lot of people are there.
Yeah, and I've told you from my perspective all year, it has been very simple that the angst isn't the same. Like, they won. And so while my fandom is still there and I want the dynasty, and if they only win one, and I use only very loosely there, if they only win one World Series, as a Cubs fan to be able to say that, I understand is preposterous. But if they only win one when this whole run is done, I will feel disappointment looking back on it on the whole. But the year after they won, I just don't have the same angst. But to your initial premise of fan responsibility, it could be an empty ballpark and it still is on the players.
Of course it is.
You know what I mean? It's on the players over the fans.
But if you're a person who has ever granted a bit of credence to when a player says, man, these fans it got us going. It was electric in here. Like, and so many of them have said that.
They all
forever.
Say.
They all
say. Yeah, they pretty much all say.
But if you've ever granted that any credence, then the inverse is thereby true. That a dead ass crowd can do its it can get in people's head a little bit, say, man, why are these people all dead? Why does everything feel sunken in here, especially when things start to go bad, right?
Well, listen, if things start to go bad, it's very tough when things go bad to ask a crowd to be standing and clapping and cheering and chanting. Now, when it's 0-0, when the game starts, let's put it this way, when the game starts and you've got Hendricks on the mound, top of the first. Yeah, I hope it is roaring. Like, I hope it is loud and that energy carries through and he goes 1-2-3 and all of that. But the first, like, my guess is people sit in the first inning, top of the first. And if there's a walk or a single or anything that would disrupt, like, one blip of anti-positivity, which would be negativity for the Cubs, my guess is people will sit down because that's what most baseball fan bases do, and that is certainly what Wrigley has been like through these playoff runs.
Yeah, I think if you're going and you agree that often the place is more reactive than proactive, tonight would probably be a good night to be proactive. Tonight would be a good night, and I bet they could probably use it. Now, I know that they have been given nothing but love for, you know, the entirety of the run, pretty much. So it's not like they're desperate or something like that. But I've seen it help. You know, I've seen it help. Heard players talk about it helping.
I've had players say that because it was so loud in a stadium that they miscommunicated in the outfield and dropped the ball. Like, so, like, of course you can have an impact on the game and all of that stuff. But again, that's rare, right? It's the exception rather than the rule, and it's almost exclusively started by something positive. Man, Cubs got up 2-0 because Rizzo knocked in Bryant with a 2-run homer in the bottom of the first, and the place was rocking after that. Like, it's very, very rare that you ride that wave the other way.
A Hendricks shutdown inning might be enough, right? Just get him going, and then, oh, a run. Can you imagine if they scored a run in the bottom of the first?
That'd be fun.
That would be fun. Probably enough. But feel free to hop in at 312-644-6767. Maybe you think I'm completely full of crap, and you have absolutely no responsibility if you're going to the game.
More towards that. It's a romantic view of it.
It is.
And I think it's an idealistic view of it. Like, sure. I think it is not very likely that the Wrigley Field fan that's paying $250 a pop probably on average to get into this game for their, what, ninth postseason series in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, I find it very unlikely that down 0-2 that they're going to – all of a sudden people are going to be like, you know what? You know who turned that game? The Cubs fans from Jump Street. It doesn't mean it's a bad fan base. They set a population record for the parade. It's a good fan base. It's just not that type of fan base.
You see, the Dodgers crowd was the traffic can suck there as you're headed towards Dodger Stadium.
I've read that,
but that was pretty barren for the first inning and a half or so.
LA sucks,
and yet they won.
And they won, right, without the crowd making a huge impact. Jay, how are you expecting yourself to be tonight, or your thoughts on this crowd?
Oh, well, for me, I'll be crying, puking, and dying like I always do. Spiegel, I think what you're saying is kind of valid. We saw a series in the past, before Joe Maddon, where the Wrigley crowd was so nervous, and the players felt it.
Yes.
And they were affected by it, and they said so. It was a different team. It was a much softer team mentally. But a nervous crowd can play a role.
Yeah, when what are you talking about?
Which it was series? The Ted Lilly Dodgers series, yeah. If I'm not mistaken. What year was that?
Because that came after the D-backs. Was D-backs first, then Dodgers, in terms of the two sweepouts in 07 and 08?
They were both. The fan base was nervous in both.
Yeah, especially the second one, though.
It was palpable. Mm-hmm. Even before any game was played, people were saying the crowd was sort of quiet, sitting on their hands, scared to lose.
I remember that.
But that team was soft as a grape. I mean, mentally, they had nobody like this Cubs team has, like Lester, Arrieta, or Rizzo.
And that's the other part of it. Like, someone texted in, wow, begging for the fans to stand, sad. I just like good atmosphere at sporting events, but I also, this team is good. Like, this team is resilient. You got Hendricks on the mound, you're back home, you've got MVP caliber players in your lineup. Mm-hmm. Like, you can beat this team. Like, I still think you can beat this team. Now, lose tonight, you're going to hear a very different side of me tomorrow. But, like, right now, today, 9 hours until first pitch, yeah. Like, I still feel like they can beat this team.
Should talk to somebody on those teams, the 07, 08 teams, about that transference of the nervousness. Ryan Dempster would be a good one to talk about. He did not have himself a good series there. So, yeah, a good appearance there. I mean, because I remember them talking about it, and I remember us kind of realizing it. So it's getting the context. I like your anti-positivity, though, by the way.
Oh, instead of just negativity?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the opposite of a double negative. It's the...
It's the double...
Double positive?
No, it's a negative and a positive.
It's a negative and a positive.
Yeah.
It's a... What, conflicting word? What is
sure.
There's a phrase for that.
Sure.
Paul Bernstein. Or we'll just ask him a transition, or we'll forget about it, and the texters will correct us. Because they are just gnats swirling around, ready to pounce on any mistake.
Like we're Jabba Chamberlain on the mound.
As you may or may not make. But yes, your fan responsibility claims, and people want to talk Cubs and Maddon. And you think he's going to be testy? Testy Joe?
I don't know. Maybe not. But I think...
He can't be just goes, yes.
Well, some of the questions are going to be the third time around, and with how he sounded the second time around, yeah.
Yeah, there's going to be... He's going to start with exasperation, I would assume, as soon as we go down that path. But so it goes. You're going to have a real conversation with the man. We had a real conversation with the man after they won the World Series. Had a few minutes of a direct conversation about those bullpen choices, you know? He knows the deal. Knows what it is.
Oh, yeah. He welcomes second guessing. And then, as Jason said one time, he's like, and then you do it. And he kind of bristles against second guessing. But hey, that's part of the exchange here. We'll do the song and dance coming up at noon. Mike Lombardi at 11:40. Your calls before that at Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Texter writes in, I know hindsight is 20/20, but Emery made a huge mistake extending Jay Cutler over McCown. yeah, little off topic, but thank you.
Text from 4 years ago?
Yeah.
Is it working?
Yeah.
By the way,
this cake is on fire.
Hindsight is not 20/20. We learned yesterday.
Oh, Big Cat said hindsight is 40/40.
40/40. That is.
Hindsight is the 40/40 club. Yeah, it is.
40/40 hindsight.
40/40 hindsight. That's right. On this show, hindsight is always 40/40.
Why just use 20/20 hindsight when you can double it?
That is twice the hindsight.
Double the hindsight. Damn it.
40/40 hindsight.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, 40/40 hindsight.
Absolutely. That's imagine how good your vision would be if you had 40/40 vision. Think 20/20 is good.
This center has to be at least 4 times as big. Yeah. This audio brought to you by Indeed.com. Are you hiring? Join the over 3 million businesses that use Indeed.com for hiring. You post know, your next job opening on the world's number one job site, Indeed.com.
You know, as Jay Zawoski brought up, I'm using probably about somewhere 35-35 hindsight to look back on the 2008 NLDS against the Dodgers. And 4 errors in that second game
And like even when things went well, people would still, you know, yeah, okay, that's fine, but I know something else is going to happen here.
Yeah, oh,
and there it is.
It was different, man. It was
a different time.
It was a different time. You didn't have the faith in the organization. You didn't have the faith that it was real and that it was sustainable. And that, you know what I mean? It was like, oh, wow, maybe we'll catch this lightning in a bottle, but probably not because we're the Cubs. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
This time around with Theo and the Ricketts family and Joe and everything, like, it felt like the start of a long stretch in 2015. That was never the case in 07 or 08.
This text, guys, I really don't like the way that Scottie Pippen set out the last 1.8 seconds of that playoff game.
Let's get some 40-40 hindsight texts going if we could. Text line 67011.
40-40 hindsight.
Text says, I know hindsight is 40-40, but it feels like Marcus Fizer was a wasted draft pick.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. It's a good point. You were able to arrive at with your 40-40 hindsight. Any 40-40 hindsight on the Hawks, Jay, that you've really just been feeling to like you need to get off your chest? We need to have Hawks representation on this show, I'm told.
Zhamnov? Yeah, maybe an Alexei Zhamnov?
The Karpatsev trade.
Oh, rest in peace. Come on.
Too soon,
Rick.
Even worse trade.
Oh, man. Rick the Sniper, man.
Wow, he really is. He's real savage today.
He's a bad guy.
Mr. Pouty Pants knows hindsight is 20/20. It's not. It's 40/40, sir. But America really should have done something about those Nazis in Germany before Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. Crystal Knocked wasn't enough.
That Trojan horse was always a little fishy.
My God. Yeah, that's right. I got crystal knocked anger at 11:25 on a Tuesday.
What is going on? Like the optometrist swaying in. Guys, technically the lower numbers leads to better vision.
I know that.
Yeah. And can't be saying 40-40 would actually be twice as worse. No. 40-20 would be as worse. Like, it's if you can see something 20 feet away and it looks like 20 feet away is 20-20. So 40-40 would be 40 feet away looks like 40 feet away.
All I know is that my vision's 20/10 thanks to Sharp Vision Modern LASIK.
Yeah, look at you.
Live read.
Cash and checks.
And you, my friend, could be a batter. I remember Ted Williams had 2016 vision. And I know that much. I know that much. And that was pointed.
Cool.
Yeah, right?
Cool.
That's what I'm saying. Cool. You need any more random Ted Williams medical facts? I'm your guy.
40-40 hindsight, but the coach should have gotten Walter Payton into the end zone.
40-40 hindsight.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
Oh, man. Appreciate everybody.
Yeah, you guys are doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Brian in East Chicago. Current or hindsight, whatever you got for us, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Hi. How you guys doing?
We're good.
Okay, listen, I got a prediction. I want to know what you guys think of this. I think the Cubs will win tonight with Hendricks on the mound, but they'll lose the next two games at Wrigley.
Well, I don't like that prediction at all, Brian.
But I'm asking, do you think that's possible?
Sure.
Of course.
I do absolutely think that's possible. I appreciate that.
There are
call.
Three games, and someone will win one and lose.
Well, you said what you think
games.
Of that prediction. I think I don't like it. I hope very much that he is wrong.
You know,
but it is, of course, possible that he is right.
So many of the 40-40 hindsight texts that we're getting right
yeah,
now
please.
Are about Refrigerator Perry really? Scoring instead of Walter Payton. It is amazing how many of them are about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, it was a ridiculous decision. It was a ridiculous move. Get the fridge in the end zone instead of
I know.
Sweetness.
That one lingers. That one hurts. This texture has 40-40 hindsight. When Madden should not have sent out Lackey to face
yeah.
Hashtag anti-positivity.
That is recent 40-40 hindsight. 40-40 hindsight. Michael Jordan is a steal. Third overall pick. Yeah, well done by the tech.
All right, here's some more optometrists. 40-40 is the same as 20/20 vision. Means you see 40 feet away like you're standing 40 feet away.
That's what I said.
I have 20/18, so I see 20 feet away like I'm standing 18 feet. Well, good for you, sir.
Yeah.
Good for you and Ted Williams. The late Ted Williams.
With his head.
Yeah.
Can't be okay over there.
Yes.
Okay, no, we just
we,
check
we were,
out.
We were just debating if we should bring up Jordan Bell again in terms of 40-40 okay. hindsight.
Don't do it. All year long, it's going to be. I told you I'm in a fantasy basketball league, and we drafted rookies, and I took Jordan Bell in the second round just because it's a keeper league, and it's my guy.
And the best part of all this is, yeah. At best, he's like a fourth big on that team.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Speaks wants him. Needs him.
We're going to see. Kebby, he's going to play like 11 minutes a game, right? Like 11 minutes a game, and he's going to average 3 and 5, something like that. Right?
And you're going to be furious that those 3 and 5 weren't here.
Because they'd be 30 minutes a game, and you'd be developing. And the idea that you couldn't use a man like him, that you'd rather have an empty roster spot. Well, I'm glad you got Ryan Arcidiacono with that empty roster spot. Right? Isn't that who they got, among other people?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 40-40 hindsight, you should have been the GM of the Bulls.
You will not.
40-40 hindsight.
You will not diminish my Jordan Bell anger, Campy.
40-40 foresight. Big Cat's going to kick your ass when he hears that this bit is, this soundbite's been turned into a bit. Yeah, it's possible. Let's get an update. This segment was brought to you by Taco Bell. Taco Bell just made a taco shell entirely out of fried egg and filled it with bacon, potatoes, and cheese. It's called the Naked Egg Taco, and it's about to make breakfast a lot more interesting. 10 minutes, we'll talk to Michael Lombardi. 30 minutes, we'll talk to Joe Maddon. That is 40-40 foresight.
That is 40-40 foresight, without a doubt. Looking forward to talking to Lombardi. He's had strong thoughts about the Bears on a variety of fronts, including Mitchell Trubisky, as he's watched him play, as he's watched the machinations around getting him into the lineup to begin with. And I want to ask him about the Lockenfora report, because he might dismiss it out of hand, he may not, but there's a lot to talk about around the league.
Right, we're gonna keep it quick with Lombardi ahead of our conversation with Joe Maddon, though. But we always like talking to him. We unfortunately had to reschedule last week with all the Cubs stuff going on. But yeah, man, it's good. Any more texts coming in on this, or do we want to go to Sean's call?
Let's talk to Sean.
Sean, you're on the score. Go ahead.
Hello, Sean.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, I had a quick question for you guys on your opinion. Last game back in the, I believe it was the third inning, we had Javi on third with nobody or one out, and John Jay was up the bat, and he worked a 3-0 count, and I was texting my friends to safety squeeze. I thought it was a great spot to do that. Runs were at a premium, and we needed to push a run across. Would have changed the score possibly 2-1, and then we would have been able to bring in Wade Davis in the ninth. Just wondering what you guys thought about that. And I think we should play Avila instead of Contreras. He's done nothing but hit since he's been here. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for the call. It's been a long time. I was talking to Joe Sarowski during a break earlier, if he thought that, or he was asking if I thought that Contreras was an option to sit tonight, and I don't. I would be floored if the Cubs went anywhere other than Contreras the rest of the way.
I mean, he's been the guy. He's been the guy, and he's been a great player all year. It's just he's had some moments where he looks absolutely lost.
Offensively and defensively.
Yeah, defensively, there's been definitely some rough moments in terms of blocking the ball and stuff like that. A couple of great throws from his knees, some of those crazy great throws that Javi's made tags on.
Yeah, they're not going to go away.
Smacking Puig on the head. But the at-bats, a couple of the at-bats, the at-bats against Jansen were scary. You know?
Yeah, not close.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think you might consider, I bet Contreras will play, but I would hope that Joe considers pinch hitting for Contreras against Jansen in a late inning, perhaps, which is, an awkward thing to have to say about that guy who's been so, so good. But my God,
I think if it was a traditional safe situation and you were losing, maybe, but I don't know in, tie game situations that he would do that. But yeah, certainly something to consider. And then I generally am not an advocate for more bunting, but I would say that was a huge spot that did not get enough attention. We talked about it for a few minutes, but not getting Javi home from third less than two outs when your bats are struggling this much,
right,
to not have at least a productive out in that spot is something that was huge in that game. And it's just huge for a team that, relies so much on home runs. You've got to be able to execute small ball when you're not hitting home runs. So I would not advocate for a safety squeeze and a bunt in that spot, but absolutely not getting him home was a huge failure.
40-40 hindsight, I'm not sure Speaks can really count on Patrick Manley's long-term commitment to doing a daily sports talk radio show.
Sure.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. No, and I like this texture says all scoreheads have 83-83 vision, my friend. There it is.
Should consider that. My bad.
Now we know.
Michael Lombardi had some criticism of the Bears in Mitch Trubisky's first game, and we'll see if he has some praise for him and them out of his second. We'll talk to the former GM next, and then Joe Maddon at noon on the score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Michael Lombardi.
Organizations and cultures matter.
Front office insider at The Ringer.
Joe Walsh told me this. Very few people can evaluate the quarterback, and even fewer can coach him. When your mama lifts you from the crib, you're either a quarterback or you're not. You can't train it. It's a crib thing.
Super Bowl champ.
Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
I'm not name dropping. That's my life.
Lombardi. A certain magic still lingers in the very name.
Michael Lombardi with Spiegel and Parkins on The Score.
This segment with Michael Lombardi from The Ringer and TheRinger.com is brought to you by Liberty Auto City. Visit LibertyAutoCity.com. We're going to ask Ryan Dempster one question in 15 minutes, and then we're going to talk to Joe Madden in 20. But let's talk some Bears and the NFL with Michael Lombardi on the Spiegel and Parkins Show. We always appreciate his time. Thank you, Michael. What have your impressions been now through two games of Mitch Trubisky?
Well, I think you can see he's got great athletic skills. I think you can see he's got an incredible arm. I mean, he's more accurate on the move. My sense of watching him play is he's going to be a better on-the-move quarterback than a pocket passer. I don't think he's really comfortable in the pocket. I think they're going to have to keep moving him at different launch points in the passing game and hope he can develop into more of a pocket passer. But right now, his feet and his arm aren't tied together, which is one of the big Bill Walsh things. You know, you want to have a rhythm between your arm and your feet. People think that the 49ers with Bill Walsh always wanted a quarterback that could just run around. And to a degree, he wanted one with great feet, like Trubisky has. But he also needed somebody whose feet were tied to their arm and could actually operate. Remember the great Steve Young when he played at BYU? He was a much better quarterback when he got out of the pocket due to his lack of height so he could see more. But eventually that came into fruition. He became a better pocket passer with the 49ers. I think Trubisky's going to have a long way to go to work on his game in the pocket.
So he, as a guy who's going to have to develop that, that's incredibly common, right? These days you got a quarterback out of a spread system like that, an athletic one, and some develop and some don't. What have you learned over the years about why some can develop and why some cannot?
You know, it's kind of an instinctive thing. It's like, it's that crib thing again. It just has a natural feel to it. And I think what I would say is if I were Ryan Pace, I would be very careful about, you know, making sure that this kid played in the same offense year after year after year. I don't think he's going to be one of those guys you're going to change the offense a lot on. I'm not trying to say he's not real smart, but I think the more he can play within the same system, I think it's going to benefit him much, much more. And I think that would be, you know, a system like what Dow Loggins is trying to do, keep him on the move, get him out on the corner, run the bootlegs, that old Washington Redskins system with Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan's run it in San Francisco. I think those that don't have to rely as much on the down the field. The key for this kid is being able to get comfortable and play fast. The only time he plays fast is when he's on the move. When he's in the pocket, he doesn't play fast. He looks to run. I think those are things that take time to overcome.
Do you think he's playing too soon?
No, I think he needs all the reps he can get. I think it's pretty clear. Two things are clear. It's clear why he didn't play early enough at North Carolina, and it's clear that he needs the reps. I think those are two. He didn't play enough. You know, I think that what happens is, you know, coaches in college get impatient. They see the great talent. You can see why he was Mr. Ohio. You can see why he's got great ability. Don't ever underestimate his talent. When he's on the move, the throw he made in the Minnesota game on the move was incredible. I mean, sometimes he does some things, but it's going to take him some time to get used to that pocket. And the only way that's going to happen is by playing him.
You know, there was a report out there that John Fox was open to the idea of playing him sooner than he actually did, and it was Ryan Pace's contract and promises to Mike Glennon that delayed the conversation. Is that conceivable to you, or what did you think when you saw that report, if you did?
Well, I don't believe that, you know, look, the GM should you know, Theo Epstein's GM title and Ryan Pace's GM title are two different things. The baseball general manager controls the players when they play, the development of the players. In football, that has to come from the coach. You know, that can't come from the GM, because if the players think in football they're working for the GM, you can't really have any ability to control the locker room. The coach has to control the locker room. And the best way to sell a program is by having people play based on their merit, not based on their draft status. you know, that's to me, and look, we've all made many mistakes in the draft, but the thing you don't want to do is make a double mistake, which is have a guy play when he's not, shouldn't be playing just because you drafted him that way. I don't believe that. I think the best players should always play. I don't think anybody should make a promise in any contract that the guy's going to play. He's got to earn the right. Once you do that, you're on a slippery slope to nowhere.
Michael Lombardi from The Ringer, the GM Street podcast, theringer.com, former NFL general manager, is our guest. On one of your podcasts, I think it was before or it was after the Minnesota game, so before Trubisky's second start, you had some criticisms of the Bears and how they looked in terms of game planning with 10 days off. What did you see and what were your problems with it?
Well, I think, look, they ran. It wasn't a problem with it. I think it was clear. What I was trying to say was they were running eight, or they only have going to run eight or nine plays. They just do them out of a bunch of different formations, and that's what they have to do to keep the game so that they feel Trubisky can handle it all. You can see he can't handle the volume of offense. I mean, it isn't like he's going to come to the line of scrimmage and be able to run everything. I mean, he's way too young, too inexperienced. 13 starts in college, or 16 starts, whatever he had in college, isn't 13. Enough to really handle it. So you can see they're trying to keep it simple. This week he throws for barely 120 yards. They win the game. They did a smart thing. They ran for 200 and some yards. They've won two games this year. They've run over 200 yards in both of those games. I think it's really interesting that they were able to win that way. To me, it's very challenging to do that when your quarterback is not able to make a lot of plays in the pocket. That, to me, wasn't really a criticism. It was just really who they are right now. And if you're playing them, you got to know that. Like, the one thing is when you play the Bears, if you're a fan of the Bears, the first quarter is going to tell you what they're going to run, and they're going to do those plays over and over again from different formations because they don't have a volume of offense at Trubisky's fingertips because he doesn't have the ability to handle all that offense.
Well, we'll see if it grows. We're all hoping that playbook grows in the next couple of weeks. Michael Lombardi, who's the best team in the NFC right now?
You know, I don't have any idea right now. I mean, Philly looks like they're playing the best. But Philly, you know, Philly's a fascinating team. Everybody talks. They've won with their defense. I mean, Wentz has been really good on third and long, beyond the imaginable. I mean, he's unbelievable on third and 10-plus. And the thing that's fascinating, people say, well, their offense is really good. Time out. They're in more third and 10s. They're in the same amount of third and 10s as the Cleveland Browns. Now, how can you be that good on offense if you're constantly in third and 10? And when you watch the Panther game, I mean, they get the ball spotted on the 12. They get the ball spotted on the 10. They get the defense has been able to take games over, turn the ball over, and their offense has cashed in once they get into the red zone. I don't know if they're the best team. I think Washington's a good team. They've got a lot of injuries. I think that hurts them. I think Seattle could be the best team, but unless they get something going offensively, I have no idea how they're going to be able to score enough points to win. They can't keep playing these three-point games. At some point, they break down. I don't have any idea. Aaron Rodgers is no longer with the Packers. I think it's going to be interesting to watch Brett Hundley play in the same offense that Aaron Rodgers played. Remember, this is a team that's 30th in the league in sacks allowed. That's with Aaron Rodgers. What's going to happen when Brett Hundley gets back there? I think this thing's wide open.
Do you have – well, let's narrow it. Best team in the NFC North.
I think right now it's Minnesota. I think Case Keenum's playing really well. I don't think he's playing great. I think he's playing well. I think their defense is really good. They're hard to play. They get you in third down. They become a problem. I think they – you know, Murray helps them run the ball. And McKinnon has been a much better back this year than he has ever been. I think they're the best team right now in the North.
The GM Street Podcast, theringer.com. We'll spend more time with you next week. We appreciate it, Michael.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
That's Michael Lombardi, former NFL general manager from The Ringer.
We were talking about the vibe in the ballpark at Wrigley and whether it can transfer, whether it does transfer, have any effect on the players. Let's talk to somebody who's been in some playoff games there that have not gone well.
Right, when it's been the other way, when the feeling was, wow, this place is dead, and there's this feeling of impending doom, and then mm-hmm. It transfer onto the players. We'll ask Ryan Dempster about that in 5 minutes, and we'll talk to Joe Madden in 10. It's Spiegel and Parkins on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back into the Spiegel and Parkins show. We will talk to Joe Madden for our weekly conversation in about 5 minutes, but we decided to call someone else for the next 5 minutes.
Was talking earlier in the hour about how some ballparks are loud proactively. And some ballparks are, you know, louder reactively. And certainly Wrigley can be explosive reactively. We've all been a part of that and seen it the last 3 years. But it's never had a reputation for being proactively loud. And we're talking about whether that can have a good effect on a team when the crowd is loud from the get-go, get them feeling good. So then, of course, the inverse comes up and the possibility of maybe on the negative side, if a crowd is scared, that can transfer a little bit.
Right, because like I'm excited for today, but a lot of people are going to be tense today. And so we figured, let's talk to someone who's been in playoff games for the Cubs, Ryan Dempster on the Grossinger Auto Group Hotline. Ryan, thanks for entertaining our idiocy for a few minutes here. What type of impact, positively or negatively, do you feel like can transfer from a crowd to a team?
Yeah. Hey, listen, man. I'm going to tell you right now that it you do feel that energy as a player, and I understand that you got to get up for the baseball game, and you don't need people to motivate you. It's not about motivation; it's about energy. And these guys, we got to look at it from like a fan's perspective, and I'll give you from a player's perspective. All right, these guys have been on three NLCS now in a row, so whether you want to believe it or not, they're tired. And meaning in a sense of like the energy level and constantly getting up game after game after game, it's hard. And so when you have moments and you have things, whether that's a teammate telling you like, hey, you know, you got this, or, you know, somebody picking you up on the bench or pushing you forward, it really, really helps. But now all of a sudden you got a crowd behind you, and it's like, you know, it's like a fighter. It's like when you're sitting there and you're in a boxing match and things are getting louder and people are chanting your name, you pull from that energy. And so for these guys to be able to pull from that, they're going to be excited anyways. They finally got some rest after long flights and traveling all across the country. But I think that it's really important as a fan base, as a crowd, to give them that right from the get-go. Don't wait for something to happen. Don't wait for a moment. Every time, stand up, get on your feet. Every time there's a two-strike count, every time that there's a runner on base. Because also on the flip side, that other team, they feel that. They feel that pressure when the home crowd is really cheering for somebody else instead of cheering for them. So I just know how awesome that can be when you get that feeling and that emotion when you're just a little bit tired or you're dragging just a little bit to be able to push through that.
You know, your former teammate Mark DeRosa has talked about some of those feelings in 07 and 08 that actually the crowd was nervous and kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop and that you guys could feel that. Do you recall it that way at all?
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. But that was, you know, I mean, that's back in 07, 08. Now when in the World Series, I think you're looking at a situation where it's not like that. They, you know, there's not a black cat. You're not looking for Steve Bartman. You're not looking for these things. So I think that it's more of now it's just how do you do it again? And it's more of an energy thing rather than waiting for the bad thing to happen.
Wrigley Field in the playoffs in terms of crowd and energy compared to other places, Ryan?
It's crazy loud, man. It's as good as they get. Like when that place is bumping and people are screaming and yelling, and there's really quite nothing like it. And you know, I liken it to like almost like if you've ever been to a football game in Denver at Mile High Stadium, there it just gets crazy, crazy loud. You can't hear yourself think, and that's what you want when the Dodgers are out there pitching. That's what you want. You want your crowd behind you, and when you're hitting in a big situation, to feel that energy and be able to zero in on that energy is a pretty special thing. Because not every ballpark, I've been in a lot of different ballparks for the playoffs, and not everyone's like Wrigley.
Hey, Ryan, have you gone down to the clubhouse and told those guys to hit? Because I think that would be a good recommendation, you know?
Just... I love how everybody says they can't hit, but like it's not like they're facing, like, you know, Johnny-go-lucky, they're facing Clayton Kershaw and Rich Hill and Brendan Morrow and Kenley Jansen. And, like, these are some, like, high-quality number one starters and you know, as good a relievers as you're going to have in the game. So
Yeah. They can't hit.
I hear you. You got to grind it out. But, man, it's the same way. It's not like they're hitting either. They got the one three-run home run. And other than that, they haven't been hitting the ball really well either.
Yeah, good teams.
Hey, Ryan, thanks for answering the call, man. We appreciate you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.